Amen. So this week, we're going to keep talking about miracles of Jesus. We've been talking about that for a few weeks now. And this is our fourth night and our final night talking about these miracles. We just picked a couple because Jesus does a whole lot of awesome stuff in the Gospels. So we could just keep talking about it for a long time. But we just kind of looked at four different ones. And he's been healing people. And the couple we've looked at, these two dudes who couldn't walk. We saw a blind guy all of a sudden able to see. And tonight in Mark chapter 4, we're going to see kind of a different thing. Like, we've seen Jesus able to do things for people who are sick or broken in their bodies. But tonight we're going to see Jesus' authority in an even different way. I'm not going to say a bigger way, but a different way. Because all of a sudden tonight, Jesus is going to look at nature and be like, "You're mine." And we're going to see that nothing has more power than Jesus. And so you guys can open with me. We're in Mark chapter 4 tonight, starting in verse 35. And this incredible thing happens, and it's mind-blowing. And sometimes we look at it, and we all of a sudden see the miracle. This amazing thing that happens, just like we did in these other stories. And it's what grasps our attention, right? We're like, bah! And all we see is the awesome thing Jesus did, this really supernatural, really powerful, really amazing thing. And we walk away from this like encounter and we're like, oh man, all I remember is Jesus did this really powerful thing, but I don't remember what it meant or why he did it. And the thing with these miracles is that Jesus does them to get our attention so we can see his power and his authority, but for a reason, not just for us to walk away and go, whoa, like that was entertaining. Because it is entertaining and it is mind-blowing. But there's something he wants to teach us through doing the miracle. And I don't want us to miss the lesson that he has for us through these different miracles. So Mark chapter 4, I'm going to read it for you real quick. Starting verse 35, it says, "On that day, when evening had come, he said to them, 'Let us go across to the other side.' And leaving the crowd, they took him with them in the boat just as he was. Other boats were with him, and a great windstorm arose. And the waves were breaking into the boat so that the boat was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him and said to him, 'Teacher, do you not care that we're perishing?' And he awoke and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, 'Peace, be still.' And the wind ceased. And there was a great calm. And he said to them, 'Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith?' And they were filled with great fear and said to one another, 'Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?'" Whew, what a powerful story. Because we live in Florida, right? Like, we understand storms and hurricanes and tornadoes and like the whole deal. Weather and crazy weather is just kind of an everyday life thing for us here. It's part of our seasons and our rhythm of life. And so we understand the power of nature. We understand the power of storms. And Jesus is able to just look at that great, powerful thing and just go, "Hey, I control you." And it bows before him. And people who see this, their minds are blown, obviously, because they're like, who can do something like this? How is this even possible? He has to be who he says he is. There is no man on earth or woman on earth that could walk up to a storm like this and just say, "Hey, chill out." And like, boom, all of a sudden, there's peace and calm. Like, no one controls nature the way we've seen Jesus control nature. It is this unbelievable authority that Jesus has, even over creation, obviously. And we know why, right? We know some of the insight of this because we've read the Bible, and we know that in Genesis, Jesus himself, the Son of God, second person of the Trinity, is the one who literally speaks everything into existence. He's the one who creates all of creation. So, of course, that creation would bow to him. He made it. And, of course, creation would bow to him because Hebrews tells us that he holds it together. He literally sustains everything so it doesn't disappear. If Jesus stopped thinking about us, nothing would exist. He holds us in existence. And so obviously nature will bow to the one who created it and holds it in existence. But we have such kind of small minds as humans. We have a small perspective. So when we look up there, we're like, whoa, how could that ever happen? And Jesus is like, how couldn't this ever happen if you know who I really am? And so we get caught up in the miracle. We get caught up in this powerful display of a thing that we see. And Jesus is like, actually, instead of going, whoa, this miracle is incredible, what if you got to know me? What would you think about me? How would it blow your mind when you saw who I am and why that miracle could happen because of who I am? And all of a sudden, instead of being like, whoa, the storm was calmed, we go, whoa, Jesus is incredible. Jesus is so powerful. And our eyes and our hearts are drawn to Jesus instead of to this miracle. And that's where he wants us to be. That's where he's calling all of our hearts tonight. And so let's just kind of walk through the story, because there's some incredible things that happen here, these lessons he wants to teach us. So verse 35, it says, on that day when evening had come. Now, they're at the Sea of Galilee. It's this big, incredible, massive sea, right? Like, or lake, or whatever you want to call it. It's this big, massive water. And so Jesus is there, and he's going around it. And there's these little villages where people are sick and hurting. And he's going into these villages, and he's healing people. He's loving people who are like unnoticed and unloved and feel like there's no hope in their life. Jesus is bringing them hope. He's feeding people who are hungry. He's preaching the gospel to people who are lost. Like, he's doing incredible things in each little village, and people are coming up going, Jesus, we need you. We need what you're offering, because we can't make it anymore in life without it. And as he's doing this, these massive crowds show up, and he's working all day, like early morning, late at night. And this says it's like nighttime has come, and he has been ministering to people all day long. If you've ever been on a mission trip, you understand probably what it's like to go out and just work hard. You wake up early, you go out, you do a medical clinic, or you go to a village where you're working, or into an orphanage, and you are working, and it's hot, and you're sweating, and like you're dealing with people who are hurting and difficult to deal with, and there's lots of things going on, and it drains you. And so by the end of the day, you are just exhausted, ready to plop in your bed, just to have to wake up the next morning and go again. That's Jesus' pace of life right now, as he's doing ministry. He's out there and he's ministering and he's exhausted, and it's nighttime, it's getting late, and they have been working, him and his disciples, all day long. And this wasn't the first day of this. This is their rhythm of life right now. And so these guys are like, we got to go. Like, we need to be on the other side of the lake. We got to get in the boat and go. Look at what time it is. We're already way late, Jesus. You don't want to be on the Sea of Galilee at night. And it's nighttime. And so they're like, hey, we need to go to the other side. And look what happens here. He said to them, let us go across to the other side. Jesus looks at these guys. And they're like, wait a minute. It's nighttime now. Let's get a hotel and just chill, or let's stay at somebody's house and just sleep now. Like, it's too late. You've already made us stay too long. Why do you want to keep going? And Jesus is like, no, there's more work to be done. I have an appointment, like a divine appointment that God has set for me on the other side of this lake. And when we get there, boom, it's time to go. If we wait here tonight, we won't make it. Like, Jesus was all about the kingdom of God. Jesus was all about working to help others and to honor his Father. And listen, he's such a beautiful example for us. Because sometimes, like, the Christian life, we forget that God does want us to still work. You're not working to earn salvation, but you're working because he saved you. You're working to honor him. You're working because he's called you to a thing, and we obey, and we get up, and we do things for the kingdom of God. But so few Christians nowadays are doing something for God, because we think like, well, I don't want to work for my salvation. I don't want to feel like it's work-based. It's not work-based, but you should obey Jesus still. Jesus worked. Jesus went out and he shared the gospel. Jesus went out and loved people. Jesus went out and served people till he was so exhausted he could barely move. And as Christians today, sometimes we just go to church and we're like, all right, I'm exhausted from my week, so let me just sit here and you feed me. I came to church so I could feel better. Play some music that will lift my spirits up and let me sing along with you. Tell me some stories that will make me laugh and give me hope and let me leave here filled up. And give me some fellowship and give me, like, have a list, don't we? And we think church is just about coming and being fed, being ministered to. And listen, part of it is. This is the place you should come for that. But don't be confused, because that's not all it is. As we come and we're fed and ministered to, Jesus is calling us to then get up and be the ones that minister. Just like he did, following his example. So how many of us don't just come to church to be fed, but we come and we serve? We talked about leadership last week, right? This miracle that we saw, and how leadership is about serving other people. Look at Jesus leading. Look at Jesus ministering and serving and loving people and working his butt off so that the kingdom of God could be made known to these people. Do we do that? Let's get rid of the we in that. Do you do that? Is that your interaction with the Lord? Is that your relationship with God, where you're like, Lord, tell me what to do. I'll obey. I'll work for you. I'll get out there and exhaust myself for you. I will share the gospel and minister to people. Some of us, it's like, that's not even like a thought in our minds. And maybe tonight he's waking us up a little bit and be like, hey, part of what I've called you to do is serve me, but we're just being fed. We're just being the Christians that are like, hey, just give us, teach us, preach to us, let us worship. But we're not serving, and we're not leading, and we're not going out. And Jesus is calling us to do that, to look like him, to do some ministry, to sweat, to whatever it is that he's calling you to do. And it might not be to some hot third world country where you're going to sweat and all that deal. It might be your own backyard. I don't know where he's calling you. But he's calling you. And so it's worth asking him and saying, Lord, will you make it clear to me and show me so I can say yes, and so I can serve you the way I saw Jesus do in the Gospels, the way he does in my life all the time. It says, so, and then leaving the crowd, it says next. So he's like, all right, hey, we got to go. And then he's like, hey, we actually have to leave this crowd. But you know how we left him? Filled. Like, Jesus didn't leave this crowd until all of these people had been ministered to and healed and all the problems dealt with. Like, Jesus stayed there. He cared about them. It wasn't just like this show so he could make his name great. He literally cared about these people. And to leave the crowd was this intentional thing he had to do, because he actually loved these people. That's how ministry's done. That's how leadership is done. We love the people that we're leading. We really care about the people that we're serving. That's how Jesus did it. And he had to leave this crowd. And it says, and they took him with them in the boat just as he was. Like, they didn't even have time at this point, because they're like, it's dark, it's stormy, like, we got to go. And so he couldn't even grab his cloak. He had nothing to cover himself up with when it got cold. He couldn't grab bags, like, nothing. They just grab him and they throw him in the boat and like, we're out. It was that quick. It says, and other boats were with them. So they're out there, and they go, and guess what? People are like, well, we want to go too. Jesus is doing unbelievable things. We just saw this stuff. Jump in the boat. Let's follow him across. Let's go with them. Get in the water. Come on. He's going to go do more stuff. So he's got all these little boats around them following him out into the darkness where nobody went at night on, and there's a storm coming. It's like, what are you guys thinking? And they're like, well, we see Jesus. Like, why wouldn't we go? Why wouldn't we follow Jesus? You know, when I read that, it makes me stop and just say, God, will you give me that kind of faith? Will you help me to look out into the darkness and the storminess and the scariness of life, not knowing what's next? But if I see Jesus go, like, make me want to follow. God, make me want to go there because Jesus is going there. I don't know if it's going to storm. I don't know what's waiting for me in the dark. But I see Jesus, and if he's there, it's good enough for me. I want to go. When I read that, I'm like, God, give me that faith. Help me to believe like that. Wherever you go, Jesus, I'm going, because you're worth it. And these little boats follow him. Look at verse 37. It says, and a great windstorm arose. You could have saw that coming, right? This massive windstorm happens. And here's the deal with the Sea of Galilee. It is 700 feet below sea level. It is this massive, it's 13 miles long, 8 miles wide. And the end of it is this like line of cliffs. And so as the wind comes through this thing, all of a sudden, in no time at all, it can just all of a sudden create this crazy windstorm out of nowhere. Literally within minutes, it can go from perfectly flat to this crazy storm. Massive waves, rain, all of this stuff happening. It's violent. And that's exactly what happens. And the disciples might have even been thinking like, man, we told you so. You know, like, what are we doing out here at night? What are we doing if it's stormy? And it's like, here we are. We're in the middle of this insane storm all of a sudden on these little boats, and we're going to sink. We're going down. It says, and the waves were breaking into the boat. Like, these waves were coming up over the side of their sailboats straight in. Boats filling up with water, not because they sprung a leak, but because the waves are so big and the rain is so hard, the boats are filling with water. And they're looking at each other like, we are going down. Like, how do we stop this? It says, so that the boat was already filling. Have you ever been in a bad storm? You know what that feels like to be caught in a bad storm? Like, we live in Florida, like sometimes you're just driving on 95, like on the highway, and a storm will hit, and you can't, your little windshield wipers are working like crazy, trying to like get the water off the windshield, and they're not still strong enough. You can't see a thing. People are pulling off to the side of the road. They're like, emergency lights are on. It's like a parking lot because no one can even drive. They can't see. And the wind and the craziness that sometimes can happen here, like if you've ever experienced that, getting caught in like a really nasty storm out of nowhere, you'll know what I'm talking about. You'll understand that hopeless kind of like, that like scared feeling of anxiety. Like, what is going on? Like, I don't control any of this. I can't stop this. I can't control this. All I could do is just sit here and hope nothing happens because this is wild. That's where these guys are at. They're like, it was just calm. And all of a sudden, this whole thing is completely out of control. This is a terrible storm. Our boat is filling with water. We are going to drown. And then verse 38, it says, but he, talking about Jesus, he was in the stern, in the back of the boat. Listen, asleep on the cushion. He couldn't even bring a pillow, right? He didn't have a blanket or even a jacket or any of that because they had to leave so quickly. So he's sleeping on, when it says cushion, it's talking about the thing that the people that would row sat in these little cushions to be able to row the boat. He had taken one of those and was asleep on this cushion, this dirty mat, basically, because it's all he had. And even having just that, Jesus is sound asleep. Now, number one, like, he's exhausted, right? The dude had just worked so hard all day, healing and doing all these miracles and ministering and serving people. Like, he's just that tired. But also, even in the middle of this wild storm that would wake anybody up, no matter how tired they were, we find Jesus asleep. His disciples are absolutely out of their minds right now, scared to death. They're about to die. And they look back, and Jesus is lying down in the back of the boat, snoring. The dude's asleep. Like, Jesus, how are you sleeping right now? It's interesting because that's also the place he was sleeping, in that stern position, is where like the pilot of the boat would typically be. So that instead of there being a guy there calling out and like giving directions, there's a guy there, and guess what he's doing? He's sleeping in that spot. The disciples must have felt, and it sounds in a second with because of what they say, like it sounds like they did think this. This dude fell asleep on us. He doesn't care. We're about to die. And he doesn't care. They weren't just like he's sleeping because he's tired. They went somewhere else with it. Their minds went somewhere else. Have you ever felt that way? Have you ever had something happen in life something hurt you, but like hurt you really bad. And instead of going, man, Jesus has this. This is under control. God knows. Our mind goes somewhere else. Our hearts go somewhere else. And we say something more like, don't you even care? Have you forgotten about me? Jesus, are you just sleeping up there? And like, you don't care that my family's breaking right now? You don't care that my friendships are breaking or that this is happening or that's happening? God must not care because he's not doing anything. I don't see him moving or acting or making a change here or stepping in to save this. Like, he must just be asleep and doesn't care. And as they look back at Jesus laying in the pilot's spot with his head on that mat, asleep in this storm, their minds started reeling. And not in good ways. It's sometimes when the church is in a storm, when we as believers are in a storm and it sounds like Jesus is just asleep, we think he just doesn't care about our troubles. Like he stopped loving us. He stopped caring that we're going through things. But listen, just because he looks asleep doesn't mean his heart isn't awake. Doesn't mean he's not thinking of you. Just because he's not acting and moving in a way you can see doesn't mean he's not completely informed and actually in charge of your life and your situation and all the details. And before we jump to conclusions without knowing how the story ends and what he's really doing behind the scenes, we should stop and say, Jesus, I don't see through this darkness right now. I can't see through the wind and the rain and the storms right now. I don't know, and this hurt that I'm feeling, this depression or anxiety or these things I'm dealing with in life right now, it makes it hard to see how you're interacting, but I trust you. I know that you're there. I know that you're aware. Remember, because I know that you hold all of this creation in existence. And if you can do that, you can handle this storm in my life. You can handle this relationship problem. You can handle my family problem. You're holding the universe in existence. You're big enough and strong enough to handle any problem I have. What if we responded that way? But it seems like our hearts are so quick to instead go right to Jesus and be like, you just don't care. You forgot about me. You fell asleep on me. But look at what they do. It says, and they woke him. Now they get it right here, right? Like, where should you go in the middle of a storm in your life? To Jesus. They look back and they see this dude who just healed people, who couldn't walk, are now walking and dancing. People who couldn't see can now see. People who, like, all of these miracles. They saw the power of Jesus. And they see him in their boat. And what do they do? Let's go to Jesus. And that's what we should do. The first place we should go when there are things that happen in our lives is to Jesus. Not to friends to give us advice. Not even to parents. Not to, like, it should be very first and foremost. Even before your pastor or your Sunday school teacher or your best friend, you go to Jesus. And you say, look at what just happened. Jesus, I'm broken. They went to him. And that part was great. Instead of trying to fix it and just do their own thing to make the situation better, they woke Jesus up. But they make a kind of a mistake after that. It's the heart with which they woke him up is where they made their mistake. You see, there was this old saying back in like Roman times, a long time ago, when they had Caesars and emperors. The Caesar would have this ship that was like, it would carry all of his gold and treasure and all this like fortune. And there was this saying, and often it was actually written on their boat, this ship that carried his fortune. And it said, thou hast Caesar on board and Caesar's fortune. And what that meant was nobody's touching this boat. The safest place you could possibly be in the world is on this boat, because people know this boat belongs to Caesar and all of his fortune is on this boat. And so there will be troops and guards and soldiers and fleets of boats protecting this boat. Nothing is going to happen to this boat. Even if it sinks, they will jump in and save everyone. Like, this is the safest place you could be because it belongs to Caesar. And if Caesar's on the boat, it's even safer, because they will protect him. And it makes me think about this story, because that's just an emperor of one kingdom. Imagine the Son of God, the King of the entire universe, is on your boat. Disciples, what do you think is going to happen to your boat? God is not going to let his Son drown. This boat's not going down. This is the safest place you could possibly be because of who's in the boat with you. Jesus is right there. Yeah, he's asleep. Yeah, he's laying in the back. Yeah, he's in the pilot spot. Nobody's leading the boat. But you know what? It doesn't matter. All that matters is that he's in the boat. And that should be enough to convince you that nothing could ever happen. It is no different for you and me today to say, is Jesus in your life? He says he will abide in you and you in him. If Jesus is abiding in you, if you are his boat, if he is in your life, what is going to happen to you? You have the King of creation living within you. What could possibly happen to you? King David says in the Psalms, he says, if God is for us, who can be against us? There is no one that can come against you. There is nothing that will come against you that doesn't have to face Jesus if he's in your life. Whatever problem or storm or heartbreak or brokenness has to come against Jesus first, because he's in your life. So before we're quick to jump and be like, did you forget me? Are you sleeping on me here? What if we were to say, nothing can happen to this boat? Jesus is here. He's in it. We're not going down. The storm can still toss us all over the place and look really scary. And the waves can really crash. And the water can honestly really fill up. All that can still happen. But Jesus is still in the boat. What if we really believe that in our lives? As you go through those difficult times at school and with relationships and teachers and all of the things, right? Like, life crashes in on us like it does. What if we looked at it and said, Jesus is in the boat? We can't go down. We're not sinking. Can it hurt still? Yes. Can it look really broken? Yes. Can it be difficult and challenging and cold and wet and all the things? Yes, that can still happen. But the ultimate hope is the end belongs to Jesus. He wins. You're not going down. Your ship isn't going to sink, because he's in your boat. This is what they say to him when they wake him up. Are you ready? And they say to him, teacher, you don't care that we're perishing. Whew. Imagine looking Jesus in the face and saying, like, you don't care about me. Knowing what we know today, that Jesus cares so much about you and me that he was beaten and tortured and went to a cross with nails piercing his hands and feet, and he was killed on a cross for you and me. And to think that someone would ever look at him in the face and say, he of all people doesn't care about us. He gave his life for us. Jesus cares so much about you. Enough to give his life for you. Your boat isn't going to sink. He's already won the battle. But they look at him and they wake him up, which was great. Prayer, go to Jesus first, talk to Jesus. But then they wake him up and say, you don't care about us. Man, what a detour. They were on their way. Verse 39 says, and he woke. And immediately, look what he does. He rebukes the wind and says to the sea, peace, be still. The wording here, as we read this, when you read it in the original language, it's like he wakes up groggy, like the dude's tired. Like Jesus is tired, and they just woke him up from a sound sleep. How are you when you get woken up from a sound sleep when you're really tired, right? We are asked your parents, like, it's like an early Monday morning, and you got to get up for school, and you had a late night with video games or whatever you were doing. You know, you're like Snapchatting bae or whatever you're doing, right? Like you're doing that thing. You're exhausted. The next morning, you're grumpy. You are a grumpy pants. Nobody wants to be around you. I don't know Jesus was completely there, right? Not in like a sinful way, but it says like he literally gets up. He's like, you know, like, and the word rebuked means he was sassy. He was sassy with the wind. And he says to the sea, like, these are kind of like some like sassy comments he's making. And then the words that he says, peace, be still, sounds so like calm and like polite in English. But like in Greek, it's not. And it's like basically him saying, hey, shut up. He's not happy. Like Jesus is a little frustrated right now that these guys aren't trusting him. And he looks at, he doesn't say shut up to them. He says shut up to the wind and to the storm and to nature. And he's like, be quiet. Like it was so loud. Imagine crashing waves and wind roaring and like people screaming like, we're going to die. You don't care about us. Like it is a chaotic, loud situation and he's trying to sleep. But Jesus is so confident because he holds all of the universe together that he's like, this noise is so unproductive. The craziness of you running around in the middle of your storm is unproductive. Your life, it's in my control. So you freaking out and being anxious and doing all this chaos and all this stuff you're trying to do, it's not productive. And he looks at the circumstances and the danger and he's like, I control you. So shut up. Be quiet. Enough with the noise and the chaos. And you know what happens immediately as he says those sassy words after waking up? It says that everything turned to a great calm. Like immediately waves went. The wind stops. These disciples are just like, what in the world just happened? What kind of power does this guy actually, like we saw power. We saw him do some things. Isolated little miracles. This person was sick. This person was healed. This person couldn't walk. Now they walk. These were isolated little things. But all of a sudden Jesus steps up and he looks at nature, like the universe itself. And he's like, I control you. Boom. And they're just like, who is this guy? We thought we knew how powerful he was, even though we didn't show it very well right now in the middle of the storm. But we just learned he's so much more powerful than we ever even imagined up to this point. Listen, that's what miracles do. When Jesus performs miracles, when Jesus does something in your life, when he steps in and wows you because he answers your prayer or he does a thing for you, you know what it's for? It's to grow your faith. It's so that you can look and be like, man, I knew I could trust you. I knew I could trust you all along. I mean, I thought you were great, but you're even greater than I imagined. And every time Jesus steps in and proves who he is to you, which he loves to do over and over, not because he has to, but because he loves to, so that you'll see him with bigger eyes every time going, you are so incredible. I'll go anywhere with you. I will follow you into any storm, any darkness, Jesus. You keep blowing my mind with the things that you do and how much you love me. instead of looking at them and going, don't you even care? Sometimes that storm that you're so upset about in your life is really just so that at the end you'll look at him and be like, wow, you don't just care. You love me so much. You are so trustworthy. It completely flips your perspective of who he is. He is the king of all. There is nothing greater than Jesus. He is literally in control of everything. Look at verse 40. He says to them, why are you so afraid? You guys are running around screaming, like, why are you so afraid? Look at Jesus in the boat. You know what he can do. And he says, have you still no faith? After you've been following me around and I've been doing these things, that you get to stand there and with your own eyes watch and see and experience. I'm doing them so your faith will grow. And here we are in another test. And I'm sleeping so you can be tested, so you can see for yourself what kind of faith is in your heart. And sometimes he does that. Sometimes you go through a hard thing so that you can see what's in here. He wants you to know. So that you can look at him and go, man, I need you to grow my faith. Jesus, I need more faith. Look at it. I went through this hard thing and immediately I turned on you. Will you help my faith grow, Jesus? And when you ask that, be careful because he'll do another thing. He'll put you in another situation that allows you to now grow your faith. And those situations, spoiler alert, those situations can be scary, but that's how you're able to see whether or not you actually have faith. How you're able to have an opportunity to trust him and for your faith to grow and for him to show up and be like, I'm here. You're not going to sink. Trust me. Take a step of faith with me. Grab my hand. Walk with me. And now look at what happens, right? He says, how do you still not have faith after all this? And they were filled with great fear. They weren't scared anymore about the storm. That great fear, the storm was calm. There weren't waves anymore. There was no more wind. They didn't have to worry about the boat sinking and filling with water anymore. So when it says that they were filled with great fear, it wasn't the storm anymore. It was now the guy in the back of the boat. Their fear went from what could happen to them to who was right there with them. And it wasn't this fear of like, oh no, he's going to kill us. It was this fear of how could we not have seen this before? Could we not see how much he loves us? Did you hear what we just said? Did you hear what we just accused him of not caring? This fear that welled up within them was because of this unbelievable power that they just witnessed that was right there, their best friend. Jesus, their king, their savior, sitting in their own boat. And it filled them up with this healthy respect and reverence and fear in their heart for the king of the universe because they finally got the blinders pulled away from their eyes and could see who he really was. And some of us tonight, we need those blinders removed. We need to ask God tonight, will you help us really see who Jesus is? Will you cause us to see how powerful and great and big and amazing and how much he loves us? Because we still look at him in such a small way. Our hearts need to be filled with fear, healthy, respectful fear for our Savior. Look what they say. It says, and they said one to another, who then is this? That even the wind and the sea obey him. Who is this guy? This is not a mere man. This is not some prophet or preacher or even king. This is God. Jesus is God. And he's in our boat. Jesus tonight wants you to know who he really is. You're like, I'm already a believer. I'm a Christian. I know. Like, you don't have to tell me that. No, no, no. Hold on. Don't be too quick. Even believers in the room tonight, these guys were believers. These were his closest disciples. And he had to open their eyes. So before we sit here tonight in a very cocky, arrogant way, we're like, no, but I know Jesus. I'm saved. You don't have to preach this to me. Before you do that, don't make that move yet. Why don't we first ask the question, do I have some blinders like these followers of Jesus had that need to be removed? Do I tonight really believe in the middle of whatever storm I'm in my life, I can go to Jesus, and even if he looks asleep, I can trust him? I don't have to say, don't you care about me? I can say, I know you care about me. So wake up, move, act, help. I know you love me. I know you can handle this. I'm not going to come to you with doubt. I'm going to come to you with faith. Because you're in my boat. I know I can't sink. So Jesus, will you get up and calm this storm in my life? Would you really do that? Is that really you? Are you a believer that really sees the power and the majesty of who Jesus is? And it's so strong, that faith in your heart, that you would follow him into any storm and any darkness. Say, Jesus, wherever you say you want me to go, I'm going. Would you bow your heads and close your eyes for just a second? As the band comes up to lead us in another song, would you just ask yourself this question? Who do I fear? Who do I respect and revere in my heart above all else? How does that affect my life and the way I live? Like, who is it? What is it that I respect above all else?